Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In this episode, we're chatting with Dr. Nick Housley, the Director of Clinical Research for Motus Nova. This is the second episode of our Motus Nova series about stroke recovery and rehabilitation. How does Motus Nova help stroke and brain injury survivors bridge the gap in their recovery at home? Let's find out from Dr. Nick. Boom, intro done.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Lauren.
And we are
the Neuro Nerds. Yes, that was on time.
I feel pretty good about that.
Neuro Nerds.
Welcome to the Neuro Nerds. Once again, I say it every week. I absolutely mean it every week. Very special episode. Special guest today from Motus Nova, the chief. Wait, I already butchered it. Nick, I already butchered it. Dr. Nick, chief, what you just said it.
Chief scientist, yeah.
The chief scientist of Motus Nova. And I just made this big deal about how I would make people refer to me as chief scientist and nothing else. And if they said Joe, I wouldn't even acknowledge that they were there. It would have to be chief scientist Joe. So welcome to the show, chief scientist Dr. Nick Housley. What's going on, Dr. Nick?
I am not much. Thanks so much for having me here, Joe. This is going to be a fun time. I'm really excited about this.
I hope so, especially the fact that I already butchered your intro when in my head it was flawless and it was going to be great. And I think I just got stuck on the chief scientist. I love that. It kind of makes you seem like a superhero, right?
Sure. I mean, that's coming from you, but I'll accept that. That's fair.
Yeah, that's coming from you. Also, it's coming from the world because I am chief scientist, Dr. Nick Housley. So so let's talk a little bit about Motus Nova right away. I've met you before I actually met you, because in using Motus Nova, you pop up a lot.
Yeah, I do.
You've talked to me a lot on Motus Nova. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement with Motus Nova, how you got started with Motus Nova?
Yeah. It's been quite a minute, actually. I've been working with the technology kind of before Motus was even Motus. And so working with the robotic devices in about a decade ago at this point in various clinical trials. And so after we kind of completed those early studies and got all of the efficacy and the safety profiles, you know, we started the company and I was involved trying to make sure that all of those scientific approaches and were translating to the consumer products. And so that's really kind of where I am now. And I wear a few hats. And the one that we worked together under was the sort of patient clinician kind of interaction, where I'm there to help answer any sort of clinical and medical questions or scientific questions that many of the people across the country have. Right. And so I perform all sorts of tasks, like helping someone learn how to put the device on, the Motus hand on for the very first time, or how to position to make sure they're safe and, you know, modify their settings to ensure that they're getting the best type of care with the Motus hand.
You're a renaissance man when it comes to everything Modus.
So we've got a really good team, and I've got a lot of support. I'm able to use the skills that I've developed over the years to help all of the stroke survivors and survivors of neurologic injury that we try to serve. Yeah.
Right. So you said you initially started in robotics. Was that like a passion of yours, or was that just something that you just kind of stumbled into?
Yeah. So certainly a passion. I think I have a bit of a circuitous route into medical rehab robotics, though. And it was mainly as a clinician, right? So I'm a trained doctor of physical therapy with a specialty in like neurologic disorders. And when I was doing my training in school, we were actually using those robotic systems and various applications. And I was one of the clinicians involved in some of those trials. So I had early experience when these things were kind of still in the lab, still in the clinic. And that's where I kind of got my first exposure to it. So that's kind of the background.
That's interesting. So that also leads me into a statement followed up by a question. So sure. You are actually part of my community, our community. And I say our community because you are a brain injury survivor yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where my circuitous route actually comes from. So buckle up, Joe and listeners. So long story short, I'll go back to my early life. I was actually a professional cyclist. And so I was racing bikes throughout high school and undergrad. And so raced on the national team and the U.S. Olympic test team here. And back in, you know, when I was in my undergrad in 2012 at this point, I had a really bad crash. And effectively, I hit the pavement at about 35 miles an hour and happened to hit with my face. So I landed on my face. Yeah.
I'm assuming you were wearing a helmet.
I was wearing a helmet, but unfortunately, I landed on my chin. And so thankfully, this is a podcast, an audio podcast. No, I had some really good plastic surgeons, to be honest. But no, in all honesty, had a really bad crash, had a lot of facial trauma. I broke my lower jaw in about 8 places, my condyle in 2, and a bunch of skull fractures on my right side. And I had a brain bleed, right? So I had a subdural hematoma on my right side with the skull fractures, the zygomatic and temporal fractures. And so I had a traumatic brain injury and had my own experience with rehab. And actually, before that, I was doing undergrad. Mm-hmm. So doing my undergrad, and I was actually focused on genetics with the idea of going to medical school. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the plan. What ended up happening is sort of a confluence of things. My experience with rehab in hospital and sort of post-recovery, I was really motivated to not only understand how the brain was recovering and sort of changing, because I was experiencing it from the first person, which is kind of a strange thing. And also just by nature of having sort of a firsthand experience of what the rehab profession does as a medical provider. And I was just more, I guess, attracted to that as opposed to the straight up medical sort of like a physician. So that was the there's an also another sort of level in there. It's a bit personal, but I also had a bit of image issues and a little lack of self-confidence after a brain injury, not knowing if I could do the full Monty. And so I changed majors and, ultimately was successful and had a relatively good recovery. And so that was kind of the sort of vectors that intersected to draw me into neuroscience and neuro rehab. So that was the kind of backstory. So, yeah.
That's actually pretty amazing. That being said, you've recovered from what I can tell, doctor, pretty damn well.
Yeah. I got really lucky.
You said you switched majors because there was a little bit of that fear that you weren't going to be able to do. Do you ever have a regret that, hey, I shouldn't have switched majors? I should have just stuck it out. Or are you very happy and comfortable with the decisions you've made?
I am really happy with the decisions I made. I think so. The other thing, too, is with respect to my recent past after my clinical doctorate, I ended up actually going back and getting a PhD as well in straight up neuroscience, with basic neuroscience. And so that was really what kind of allows me to do that, those high level types of things, right? Which maybe would have been sort of, I might've been restricted a little bit if I just had the clinical doctorate. And so by nature of going back and getting that basic science training and some of those insight into the fundamentals and how to ask rigorous scientific questions and get those, that deep knowledge, I think I haven't been hamstrung in any sort of shape or fashion. And thankfully, I've developed a lot of collaborations with physicians over the years. And so anything that would be only accessible to a physician, I can just call a friend and we can make sure to make a collaboration out of it. Because a lot of the questions that we were trying to answer are too challenging these days, right, that we need multiple people. And so I'm not afraid of collaborating and asking for help in these sort of things. So no, I do not regret those decisions. And I think the other honest answer is I would never have been involved in this amazing opportunity that is MODIS, right? I would not have found my way into Andy Butler's lab at Georgia State University, where I met David Wu, and we were working on these early clinical trials. Like, I would have not been there had I not had that injury and all those things change. So, and I wouldn't be here today, most likely. So right. I'm talking with you, Joe. So no regrets.
Oh, yeah. See, everything in life leads to me. I feel like Thanos, you know, I feel inevitable. So now going through recovery and having the knowledge that you had already, was that a help to you or was it frustrating to know how far you kind of had to go?
Yeah. So let's, I'm going to plead a bit of ignorance on this because remember, I was a lowly undergrad at that point. I didn't really know the whole shebang. So I did have some insight on the medical side. I was doing some like undergrad research, mm-hmm. you know, that's a bit hand wavy, but I think I ended up having a really, really favorable outcome, right? It could have been much worse considering the situations. And so, or the situation rather, and most of the challenges were not physical in nature. Mm-hmm. I had some early physical challenges, but most of it was actually speech, language, and memory. And so I had to work, try to figure out, you know, strategies. And that's an ongoing thing. That's even to get through the clinical degree and the PhD, I had to leverage all the tricks to get through those and to make sure I could, to, you know, be efficient and be effective at my chosen path. So,
right. It's so it was a lot of cognitive stuff. Mostly you said memory. I still suffer from a lot of short-term memory issues. It's kind of the worst from where you started in your recovery till now. Sure. Would you say you're 100% back or would you say you're still a work in progress?
I'd say, to be fair, I never had a good objective assay beforehand, to be honest. of course, let the scientists respond in that way, right? But I think I'm pretty close, Joe, to be honest. I'm really good. Close, I think. Now to be the other thing to acknowledge here is I don't know if you can kind of imagine, I like to think about it in reservoirs, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have these compensatory reservoirs that all of us can pull from. Right. And you know, when you get hit with an insult, whether it's, you know, a traumatic brain injury, a stroke, some orthopedic injury, the disease process, whatever it is, we all have some reservoir to kind of like recover from that.
Right.
And you know, but that kind of gets reduced. And so I imagine my reservoir is kind of reduced a bit because I'm compensated in certain ways. Mm-hmm. One of the obvious ones is on my balance. I'm still quite visually dependent because I lost some vestibular function on my right side. And so I'm still pretty visually dependent. And so I notice some problems there, but mostly I would say recover at 98%, 99%, something like that.
That's good. That's good. I'm happy. Yeah. And just for, you know, the listeners out there, I would not know that you had any type of surgery. Like your surgeons were fantastic.
Yeah, it was a long 3 months. I had multiple reconstructive surgeries, and they did some gnarly things. So,
do you ever look back at the photos? You know, right after the crash, and you're like, "Wow, how did I come this far?"
Oh yeah. Or whenever I go to the dentist, I freak the dentists out too, because there's so much metal. They're like, oh my gosh, what happened to you?
I'll just say this, Dr. Nick Halsey, very attractive man, ladies, just saying. because you said you landed on your jaw, and I'm assuming at 35 miles an hour, that those two things together do not make a good time.
No good time.
Just looking at your jaw right now, I'm saying this objectively, it looks flawless. It really does. It really looks picturesque. It looks exactly how you would think a perfectly formed jaw would look.
Oh God. Well, thanks, Joe. I mean, yeah, to be fair, there's a fair amount of metal there, both here and going down for all the implants. But yeah, they did a really good job. You know, they used some interesting techniques where, you know, without getting too graphic, they effectively do all the surgery from the inside. So they kind of deglove your face a little bit.
That's amazing. So, Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. Honestly, that's so cool. Yeah. You know what I mean? Very sci-fi channel. Like, I love that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty gnarly when they told me after the fact. I didn't know beforehand going into this, but they're like, oh, by the way, yeah, we declipped your face and we did this thing. And I was like, oh. Okay, like, great.
Have you ever seen the movie Face Off? It was like really close to that.
Yeah.
So now that you have all the metal in your face, do you kind of vaguely feel like you're Wolverine? Do you feel like you're a superhero?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that.
I'm just waiting for some day when someone just tries to take a swing at me and they're just like,
right, that they're going to break their wrist and somehow, some way, knives are going to shoot out of your knuckles. So your involvement with Modus Novo, you're the science guy, basically. Like that's your, so basically this is kind of like your baby almost on the science side.
Yeah. On the science and the patient side too, right? Right. Dave is the technology, the business minds. He's the real innovator on those aspects. Right. But yeah, the science and the patient side really in my wheelhouse. So that's really where I shine and I love to work.
Well, that's good. You know, I'm a big fan of passion in our community specifically. That's why I really enjoyed having a conversation with David, because being a normie, he's so passionate about helping us in our community, I just love that. And I love that if you're not just doing this, it's like, it's a passion of yours. You know, I'm assuming like just getting it, like taking pride in a job well done, you know?
Are you a stroke or brain injury survivor looking for community and support? Well, the NeuroNerds are here to help. Join our hashtag USORock Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/USORock to connect with other survivors like you.
Plus, read other inspirational brain injury survivor stories on Joe's blog at josorocks.com/USORock. And submit your stories there as well. We want to hear them.
And remember,
USORock.
From where you started out with Modus Novo to where it is now, is it like, what does that feel like? Because I'm assuming it's just getting better and better and better.
Oh, it's bonkers. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It is bonkers. It's so much progress has been made in the last year, right? We continue to look back, and we often don't do that because we're so busy. But when we get a chance to take a breath and look back, the changes we've made over the past year have been just astronomical. I mean, just by sheer scope of number of people that we're helping on a regular basis, just orders of magnitude greater than what we're doing, 2 years ago. You know, just to give you a sense of scope, when it came to those clinical trials, it took us multiple years to get 20, 50 people, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, clinical trials are hard to do this, but now we're helping 20 people a week kind of thing, 20 new people a week. We're now into the low thousands of numbers of people, and it's like, this is crazy. But that's a lot of change. That's a big delta. But we can't stop now, because the scope of the problem is so large that we cannot rest on our laurels, and we will not. Because there's 4.5 million people in the United States that have residual upper extremity impairments following stroke, and our vision is to help all of those individuals. We may not get to that, but that's our guiding beacon. That's kind of our North Star.
I love that. And every single one of these people, they desperately need this help. They do. You know, it's changing lives. It's giving people back their livelihood, you know, and something as small as buttoning a shirt, something as little as picking up a cup of coffee, opening a doorknob, little things like this, we take it for granted every single day. People, it would change the trajectory of their life if they were able to do that again. And you're bringing that to people. Like, that's just, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, there are times where, you know, I'm doing Rehab Power Hour with a group of people, and they're telling me what type of things they're able to do now. And just hearing the stories from across the country, and it's so moving. Overwhelming almost, because having understood what it's like to lose some function and understand that delta between where you were before injury and where you are now, and how much of your sort of autonomy, your independence you've lost in trying to gain some of that back, it's so powerful. And just to be able to be part of that, and it is a really special thing, right? I don't think many people in this world will find themselves in a situation to be able to help people like this. And I feel so fortunate to be able to do this.
Well, also, you're coming at this from a completely different perspective than a lot of people in your position, because you're part of this community. I've tried to explain this to people. I can be the Picasso of explaining things, and I can paint the most beautiful picture with my words of what it's like to live with a brain injury, and it still pales in comparison to what it actually is. Like, you just can't understand unless you've been through it. You have been through it. So you have what I wish so many other people in your field would have. You have that understanding of what we go through. And I think, you know, I'm not thankful that you had a brain injury. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that, but I'm thankful that your career is now in a place where it can help our community, because it's so desperately needed, you know? And even early on, like, okay, doctors will tell you within the first year, if you don't have enough function within the first year, well, sorry, that's it. That's just, how big of a disservice is that to our community? It's so defeating for so many survivors.
Yeah. I know we were chatting before we came on live here, and I'll forego any aggressive words, but that kind of whole thing really pisses me off, to be completely honest. Because it's,
yeah, hey, you want to say the words? I'll say it. It's some bullshit, Dr. Nick.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not like they're being malicious, right? Necessarily. Right. It's just that it's a disconnect from the literature. For me, I am guided by data, right? Mm-hmm. The data in the literature supports the way I think about the world, and my vision of the world will change pending new data. Yes. But that data is so prevalent that we know that people can still have functional improvements after a year, after 6 months. And so I think, you know, one of the things that I really try to pride myself on, and of course I can always do better at this, but it's trying to take what I've learned, because I've been very fortunate in my ability to learn now, even after my injury, but to understand that there is a hunger, there's a need for information, and I'm going to do my best to be a conduit to provide that information to people and try to answer the questions as best I can, and do it that in a way that is supported by evidence. And that means good and bad, right? That means telling people that, hey, there isn't an answer for certain things, right? Hey, we don't know. But when we do know an answer to something, I will let you know the level of confidence we have in that. And so I am very, very passionate about trying to give people access to that information, because unfortunately, it's really inaccessible, right? And again, I don't think it's any one person. I'm getting on my soapbox here. I apologize, but it's not like any one person that's trying to put up these barriers for brain injury survivors.
Right.
But there are so many barriers that are in place, right? And you can just think about it in terms of on the physician side. Even if they had all the insight in the world to know all the literature, which of course they don't have the time to devote that to transmit that information to a new brain injury survivor and their care partners, right? That just doesn't exist. Right. And so there are these big disconnects, and that leads to miscommunications and all sorts of misunderstandings and all sorts of bad stuff. And so I'm very passionate about trying to do my best to help rectify that in any way I can. I'm just one dude, but I can try my best.
Hey, it starts somewhere, and I'm so appreciative to you and everybody that you've touched in this. I had a situation with one of my early primaries. Wasn't my primary after the situation where I was explaining what I was feeling. Hey, doc, I'm feeling this. And literally he's looking at a book and he's telling me, oh, you shouldn't be feeling that. I'm like, yeah, that's fine that you're reading that I shouldn't be feeling the things that I'm actually feeling, but I'm telling you with my words that I am feeling these things. But he just didn't have enough bandwidth or care to listen to me. And that's where I think a huge issue is, that I think we all kind of need to partner in together, because, well, you have the best of both worlds. You've experienced this, so you're an expert. But most doctors, they're an expert at going to school and learning about things. We're the experts in having a brain injury. So we should all be able to work together. I just don't know what's going to change that. I think we need more people like you. When are you going to be in charge, Dr. Nick? Come on.
Yeah, I do my best to advocate for this at multiple scales, right? I think one of the best ways we do this is through MODIS, right? Trying to set up these communities, and you know, the explicit purpose of these communities is to be a meeting ground, right, where questions can be asked in a safe environment. Like, we don't care what questions you ask, right? Ask the questions and we'll do our best to answer them. And, you know, at that point, what we do is we kind of provide a collective knowledge base, and we're trying to create that too, right? With all the video resources and the questions that everyone always asks me, we try to keep that's going to be in the public domain. And so those things can be always referenced. And yeah, we're trying to do this. And so we try our best to advocate, but I think, I don't know what will make the full sea change. I'm optimistic that will happen, but I'm also a bit of a realist and understand that it may not be a perfect world when it comes to that that level of incongruity between the search for knowledge and the ability to deliver that knowledge.
Right, right. We just need a less lazy doctors. That would be, you know, one of the things I would suggest. So speaking of the modus hand, which I've had some firsthand experience with, which is, by the way, it's really cool. I can't stress this enough, guys. It's just cool. It's a cool piece of machinery. The one thing I'll hammer in again and again and again is how simple it is to use. You guys have known me for close to 200 episodes now. I'm kind of an idiot. I wear that as a badge of honor. And I was able to get this thing functioning like that. Like, super simple, very easy to, you know, connect, put it in, you're ready to rock and roll. That's what I love about this. So even with a lack of intelligence when it comes to technology, a very limited capacity for technology, or even physical limitations, right? A lot of us in the brain injury community are suffering from, you know, loss of functionality on one side. Even with that, it's a very simple process. It's plug in the wall. It's plug in the arm. It's hit a button which on the touchscreen. It's so simple and beautiful, and it's very easy to connect, to pick up and go. It is an amazing piece of machinery, Dr. Nick. Can you talk a little bit about the Modus hand?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned kind of where we are now, because it's been a long time coming, right? The technology has been around for around 20 years. And so it has had many evolutions at this point. And we've learned a lot over the years with the express purpose of achieving that goal that you just described, right? It needs to be easy, it needs to be accessible, and it needs to be effective and safe, right? If any one of those things breaks down, you've got a problem. And right. So, yeah, you're exactly right. And so fundamentally, this device, this robotic device, it sounds kind of scary, robots. It's an exoskeleton that kind of goes on your arm, right? So these exoskeletons are things that go about your joints and they do something. And in the context of rehab robotics, it's a device that helps to sense your movements and to kind of provide biofeedback. And by nature of having some sensors, what we can do is we can actually condition a virtual environment on your movements. And this is really, really important because the process of neuro rehab requires us to do movements in order to develop new neural pathways. And so we have to have a way to do those movements. And you say, well, okay, well, it's just a series of sensors and a way to digitize that. And that is what it is, but it also has the ability to help you move. And the way it does this is it has, again, a fancy word called an actuator or a pneumatic actuator. But all that really means is it has a muscle on board. And that muscle can contract and relax just like your muscles. And that is an absolutely critical component to this because it can help you either initiate movements if you have trouble doing so, if you have some significant impairments, or it can help you amplify your movements in the event you need to amplify your range of motion, right? If you can maybe have a couple of degrees of movement, but if we were to, for instance, if I were to be there with any of the listeners right now and just to guide their hands through some motion, you know, kind of removing the effect of gravity as a therapist would often do, they would be able to move more. And so the device, the Modus hand, can actually do this. And the really special thing is that all of those things are not static. All of those things dynamically interact with the end user. So we're constantly sensing how someone is interacting in the world and trying to help optimize some function, whether it's range of motion to improve their actual movement, or to try to condition their strength or some precision of movement. So that's really how kind of the device works. But all of this is designed to help deliver a type of therapy called basically repetitive task practice. As I mentioned earlier, this is this idea of how do we learn to move? And it's a really complex thing. But effectively what has to happen is we can kind of revert back. All of us can think back to maybe watching a young child learn to walk for the very first time or that early process. Effectively what has to happen is they have to recruit a bunch of neurons randomly and see what happens. And they do this and they're given information by what's good and what's not good. For instance, if you're walking and you do something that makes you fall down, well, you get a powerful stimulus that that's not good, right? It hurts. You fall down. You fall on your butt. Okay, let's not do that again. And so that kind of powerful stimulus of falling on your butt and getting hurt is biofeedback. And that is what trains us to do something different. And ultimately, you'll be able to coordinate these networks and figure out, okay, well, if I recruit these 10 million neurons in this way, I can actually step out and put my foot out in front of me, and I can take a next step with my right and left foot, et cetera, et cetera. And then what has to happen is you have to do that over and 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 over again and over again to stabilize those networks. Because it's not like you can do it once and you're done. In order to do it reliably, you have to develop some groundwork. You have to really solidify the behavior of those networks so that whenever you want to reach out and pick up that cup of coffee, Joe, or me, I pick up my can of soda water here, that I'm going to reliably put my arm out, open my hand to the various aperture it needs to go to, and grasp the can with the amount of force and bring it to my lips, right? That has to be very, very reliable. And that takes hundreds and thousands of hours of movements to develop those networks. And so the device is there to help people following an injury redo, sort of recapitulate those learning processes. Really complex, but the device, we've tried to simplify it as much as possible to help people get that high dose of rehab to get that effect.
Right. And you've made it a simple for a simpleton like me to pick up and make it work and understand how it works. It's like a muscle memory, right? Is that what we're so?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's muscle memory, but it's not just in your muscle, right? It's in your brain.
Right.
And it's in your spinal cord. So it's the whole neuromechanics of this, the whole system that are remembering kind of how to do the thing you want them to do and to right. do that reliably.
Right. You're recreating those neural connections and making that, make it all work together. Like Michael Jordan, back in the day, he would close his eyes and hit free throws because his mind and his body was telling him to do that because he's done it tens of thousands of times. So it's kind of the same thing. So what's really cool about it is we don't need a coach or a physical therapist or an occupational therapist to actually hold our hand and stretch it and move it and have us do it. Like we can actually do this ourselves. And that's what's beautiful about the Modus hand that I even noticed too. So when my hand, I don't have a tremendous amount of issues. I have a great executive function, but my hand does exhaust. And when it does, I start to tremor and I lose, I get very clumsy. I drop things. It's like the worst. So I was using the Modus hand yesterday, day before, whenever it was. And my hand was a little bit tired. And I noticed when I needed a little bit of help, it gave me a little help. And I was like, oh, it's giving me a little bit of a helping hand, which was interesting because I didn't realize how tired my hand was. But then I knew, okay, at this point, that's when my hand was tired. And it gave me that little extra push that I needed, which I just thought was phenomenal. It's like it's an amazing piece of machinery.
Are you finding it hard to recover at home after stroke? Find out if Modus Nova can help you by taking their free online assessment at modusnova.com/theneuronerds. If you haven't heard of Modus Nova, they make devices to help folks with a brain injury, like stroke, regain the use of their affected limbs. For example, the Modus Hand is an AI-powered robotic exoskeleton that helps users do exercises and play games, similar to the way an occupational or a physical therapist might manipulate the limb. It helps survivors get into thousands of repetitions they need to form new neural pathways. It can assist with hand movements or resist them to provide a personalized exercise experience. If this sounds like something you want to try, visit modusnova.com/theneuronerds to learn more. Use special code TheNeuroNerds when you sign up and get a month free with the 30-day challenge. Just visit modusnova.com/theneuronerds to get started.
Yeah, and I think this is the cool thing, right? You know, you mentioned this idea of kind of not necessarily needing one-on-one care right then and there, right? We call this real-time oversight.
Right.
And I'd say, yeah, that's certainly true. I think one of the cool things about these technologies are they're not necessarily supposed to be replacing physical occupational therapists. It should be very clear. The thing is these devices are supplementary, complementary to them because they can actually help deliver. Well, first of all, they can do a better job than I can in terms of watching someone's movement, right? It's the precision of understanding someone's movement is much greater at the digital level than my eyes. And so despite all the training and all that and all the experience, so it's being able to see tiny degrees of movement and being able to see subtle errors and correct for those errors or even amplify those errors if we want to try to work in an errorful way, which can, we can talk about maybe, which is kind of a cool thing. So yeah, being able to do that is a really, really powerful aspect. And like I said earlier, none of these things are static, right? Like it won't give you help unless you need it. And right. So, and it could be just a momentary lapse of sort of consciousness, if you will, or it could be that maybe you're getting tired and you're getting fatigued and you need some additional help to complete the exercises. So that's that dynamic process that comes in to help.
That's what I thought was really cool, like for me, because I remember we did a thing, we did an evaluation and you actually adjusted my modus hand. And I yep. noticed after that, I was like, oh, I don't really, it's not really, you know, I think I'm like in a really good place. And then I noticed, oh, it's helping me when I just need it. It's when my hand actually exhausts. It's when my yep. hand is just completely like, it's just not doing what it kind of needs to do. It gives you that little bit of helping hand, which I just thought was amazing. Yep. I just thought it was like the coolest thing in the world to not only, you know, have that help, but realize, oh yeah, whatever you did, that actually helped so much, because it's like, oh yeah, yep. it's only helping me when I need the help. And it was actually like after several games where it's just like, oh yeah, by the way, the modus hand, you're playing games, guys. You know me, I'm a gamer. It's so much fun to get these hand motions in and play these games. You're basically playing, in one of them, you're playing Galaga. And another one, you're lifting weights. And another one, you're playing Rock Breaker. Like, these are just amazing games from like the 80s. And if you didn't live through this and you're one of those crazy kids, come on, man, it's retro. Check it out. It's amazing. It's what all of these games are based on. So what I love about it too is it's not there to replace physical therapists. It's an accompaniment, but you can't have a physical therapist with you at your house.
Yep.
You can't. You can only see a physical therapist, what, at most a couple hours a day? That's, you know, if you're seeing your physical therapist at 8-9 hours, that's a little bit weird. But yeah. you can go home after your therapy, and then you could literally just put in the hours. And it's not in a strange place. It's in the comfort of your own home. You know, normally like me, sitting around in your drawers, and you're gaming, and you're putting in these hours and hours and hours, and you're getting these repetitions, and it's, you know, your neurons are connecting, your hand is working, your arm is functioning. It's just such a cool thing, and I'm so excited about it because I've actually seen firsthand for myself, but firsthand with Maddie, who's like the poster yeah. girl for Modus Nova. Yep. I've seen where she started and how much work she's put in and where she is now. And it is it's mind blowing. She really, yeah. she's kind of a machine. She might be a machine.
Possibly. Yeah, no, I think it's both of you guys are real evidence that if you put the work in, and I think there are people all over the country that are great examples of this, right? Mac, I was actually just working with Mac earlier today. Mm-hmm. We're doing some cool development of some new tools that we have. And, you know, he's come such a long way too, right? There are people all over the country that have been putting in the hundreds of hours that you need and really showing the true functional improvements, which is just so incredible.
Right. So where Modus was to where it is today yeah. is it's a tremendous improvement, you know, as much as I understand. I just became familiar with Modus Nova I would say the last year and a half. I've heard about you guys, did a little sure. a little bit of my research, and I've seen Maddie just turn into a rock star, you know, in working with it. And now that, you know, I'm connected with you guys and working with you guys, it's just a beautiful piece of machinery. But this is the version that I know. Where yep. do you see Modus going in the future?
So I think one of the best things that we need to do is to incorporate different joints, right? And I think there's a couple of different paths we can talk about. We can talk about different robotic systems, like physical things that would go on an end user, right? So right now we've got the clinical data that shows that we have efficacy across the upper extremity, right? So like even though we're focused on the wrists and the hand, and we do have fine motor improvements and gross motor function improvements about those joints. And we do see some improvements up the kinematic chain, right? In the elbow and the shoulder. Other individuals have specific impairments about the shoulder or the elbow, for instance, or about the knee. And so you can imagine we're very much in the mindset of we need to make things accessible. And one of the ways to make things accessible is to make it modular. Because if you have, you know, we actually, our early life, the early version of these were a full multi-segmented robotic device at the upper extremity. And the problem with that is just like every other robotic device is it costs $250,000, right? $500,000 to make. And so, yeah, you can make one, but how many people can that actually help? Not that many. And so the idea here is to have a solution that can meet the scope of the problem. And so what we need to do is we need to take a modular approach. And so we envision taking tact and go forward with that. And so develop these additional tools that can be plugged into the same platform. We can even envision amplifying sort of home rehab, doing fall prevention with with cameras and computer vision, all these sorts of cool things. And the other side of this, that's a kind of the hardware side, if you will. The other side is something I've been very passionate about. And for a long time, even in my early sort of clinical science days, is this idea of dose. We all talk about dose and reps and all this. But the truth of the matter is, if you actually peer into the literature, we know not quite bupkis, but we know next to bupkis about what appropriate dosing is for individuals with neurologic injuries. AKA, we don't know a whole lot. And so we need to generate a large amount of data to draw proper inferences about how to help people optimally. And that is almost going to be impossible outside of the context of a robotic system like this, simply because we won't have the data. And so the other side of this is kind of what can we do with the data? When people are using these systems, data is being collected dozens of times a second. And this is not only helping you right then and there to make the system respond to you and help you when you need that help, but it's also helping us learn at kind of a meta level about how your recovery process is going. And when we do certain things, when we change certain things, how does that help you long term? And all of this is going to give us insight into the general recovery process of, let's say, a general stroke survivor. And then what we can do is we can map that on to individual characteristics. So like, say, hey, the first couple of weeks you're using the system and you're responding like this, and you have had a stroke this long and you're this old and you're from this part of the country, et cetera, et cetera. Now let's make a model that can help you based on all the other information that we have. Wow. And this is going to, I think, really be a step change in terms of our ability to optimally dose care. And because that is a big gap right now. Like, there are clinical trials that are set out. We're spending tens of millions of dollars to these clinical trials, and they're just not answering the question, right? They're just fundamentally not answering the question. And so we're going to be able to do that with these technologies.
That is, I'm just thinking in my head, it's like, because every brain injury is different. Every brain injury is completely different, because our brains are, but if you can kind of narrow it down, hemorrhagic stroke vaguely around this age from this type of person, this type of background, this type of activity, this type of, this rehab would be a little bit more optimal than something else. Somebody with, who had a traumatic brain injury it's insane the amount of, information is key. It really is. Does it kind of feel to you like it feels to me with all this information that's being collected so quickly, a little bit Skynet-ish, like a little bit of the robots might take over at some point, and the Modus Nova, the Modus Hand is going to like be like the beginning of like the Terminator.
Yeah, No. These robots are here to serve stroke survivors and survivors of traumatic brain injuries and brain injuries. So there is zero probability of Modus Hands, Modus Feet becoming sentient. Don't worry, guys.
Until Judgment Day. No, I think it's phenomenal. So are you still currently doing these research? Like, is it ongoing or is it just something that you're going to be doing in the future?
Oh, so we're doing, we're doing so much, man. There's so many projects going on. So one of the best things that we do is, we started in the lab, right? We started as an academic, pure science type of approach, right? That's where we came from, right? That's why, when I said earlier, we've been around, this technology has been around for 20 years. And the truth of the matter is, if you want to do medicine rehab right, it takes that long, right? There are no quick fixes for this because you have to go through all of the rigorous trials and the very regimented phases to establish those things. And so because of our foundations were built in that world, we've developed these partnerships and these friendships across the domains. And so we have active partnerships across the country doing various aspects of this. So just a pure smattering of them right now. We've got people locally in the Atlanta-based area where I am, I'm in Atlanta, who are working on next generation sensors, right? We're talking about different intent recognition, right? This is a big passion for me because there's a subset of individuals out there who have very little to no active movement. And these individuals have been woefully forgotten by the rehab world, right? Because you go in and you have very little to no active movement and your therapist says, you got zero progress, insurance is not going to cover this, goodbye. And like, that is horrific. That is completely unacceptable. We're trying to develop sensors that can help an individual who's in that situation gain access to a rehab protocol. And so we're developing next generation sensors, sort of multimodal approaches to condition a robotic device. So that's one thing locally here. And in terms of partnering with on the data side, we've got data scientists, right? There's a good number of sort of on the, it's actually kind of cool. There's one on the economic side trying to do financial modeling, as well as on the pure math side, trying to figure out, well, what does this data actually mean on like a time domain? And we've got some clinicians actually looking at the data because they're interested in clinical outcomes. So these are some cool partnerships. We've got some partnerships up in, I'm pointing up like it's north, up in the Northeast, who are working on non-invasive brain stimulation, right? Using the devices in combination with an at-home non-invasive brain stimulation device, right? So, you know, we think probably next generation things are going to be, it's not just going to be movement. It's going to be movement and pre-stimulating, pre-treating your brain with some magnetic stimulation, for instance. Yeah, so cool stuff. And then, you know, across the country, we've got two collaborators who are, you know, premier in the let's call it the neurotrauma world. And so we're very interested in working with them, establishing early onset treatments for individuals with traumatic brain injuries. Like, how early can we intervene? For instance, could we intervene in the acute hospital, right? In the ICU, right? Could these robotic devices go in there and operate to help someone kickstart that recovery process? So we're kind of doing a lot. And so we are not, you know, this is all kind of my domain in terms of pushing these projects forward. And it's right. It's so exciting. So exciting to have all these things going on.
The passion that you have behind it, I'm excited now. So everything that you laid out, like these are things that are happening currently, or these things that are just, well, this is what I want to happen. Or like, is everything in motion?
Incredible.
Okay. Yeah. That's,
so they're in various levels of progress, but like all of these things have people behind them and working, right? And, you know, and Modus is also providing, because we have such detailed insight into the complexities of tele rehab. We're right. also helping other academics and do their clinical trials, right? Because we've developed a lot of sort of innate knowledge about how the systems work, right? How telehealth works and how can we deliver care in the home? Like that just base level thing. And so now we are helping other academics design and implement their clinical trials. And so we're also trying to help, and this is on the advocacy side, trying to help sort of tune the next generation of science as well. So all of these things are in various levels of completion or progress. But yeah, we're really excited about all of these next aspects.
You're legitimately, you guys are changing the world. You know, I say that a lot with a lot of the things that we're doing in the community, and people think it's very grandiose. It's not. This is just fact. Look, when you give somebody a little bit of their physical freedom back, it changes who they are at their core. You know, you've changed that person's life, and in turn, you've changed how they interact with people around them, their friends, their family, significant others, their kids, their coworkers, their everybody. And then those people are a bit like, literally, you're changed the reach that you have, the impact that you have on so many lives because of what you guys are doing is just tremendous. And everything you laid out, even the one that stuck with me, is the money guy. You got the finance guy that has to make sure that everything that you guys are doing is going to make fiscal sense to keep on doing it. That says to me, especially with everything else that you're doing, you guys aren't just flash in the pan. You guys aren't just like this. It's like a cool startup and it's a great idea, and then it's gone in a year. You guys are here to stay. You guys are really changing the future, and you're really shifting the way that rehab works, you know, and that's just mind blowing. How fulfilling is that, Doc?
Oh, it's overwhelming, I'd say, right? I think in a really good way. I would never have predicted that I would end up with this kind of level of opportunity.
Right.
So yeah, it's a really special thing, I'd say. And we're trying not to squander this at all. We're really trying to execute on this.
Please don't.
No. I mean, you know, so many of these things can fail, right? But we we see the potential value to society and to improve the human condition in a real way, right? Not many tech companies, kind of medical startups, can say that. Like, we're actually helping people, and we can't afford to not execute on this.
Right. Well, you've seen the impact that you guys have had. You mentioned something, and I have several really close brain injury survivor friends that are in that category. The hopeless. That's what it seems like, and that's what they feel like. And it's because that's what the medical industry has told them. You guys are hopeless. Sorry. You know, it's been 8 years and you don't have any function, so there's nothing that we can do for you. I literally have to talk several of my people off the ledge weekly, because they're just at that point where it's just like, well, what am I doing? You know, like, I have no purpose. I have no hope. It's hope.
Yeah.
What you're doing, that's what it is, Doc. You're giving people hope. And I've truly felt this from jump. If we have hope, we have everything that we need, you know, no matter what's going on in the world. If we have hope, that's something to reach for. That's something to keep on fighting and pushing for. And these survivors that don't have the help and the honest conversation with them, you know, like, hey, you don't have functionality now, but these are the things that you can do. And there is hope. That's all they need. They need a little tiny, just a speck of hope, and it would change their life. And what you guys are doing specifically for them is you're giving them hope. And there's so many of them out there, and it's so unfortunate that they just feel forgotten and left behind. So I'm so thankful that you guys have not forgotten about this huge chunk of the community, you know? I'm so thankful, Doc.
This is one of the reasons why, you know, I was doing some of those early trials, right? Some of the early versions of our studies were like literally explicitly focused on how can we help the bottom quartile of stroke survivors in their function, right? Those individuals who have literally been forgotten. And so we've, you know, there's been grants, right? We've written papers, we've tried new technologies, you know, we keep, it's an exceptionally hard problem, right? Not to say those people are problems. That's not what I'm trying to say here. I'm saying the gap is, what can we do on the therapeutics, on the scientific side to help them? That chasm is the problem we're trying to address. And like, we've been throwing intellectual resources at it for years, and we won't stop doing that until we can make some meaningful progress towards that end. Right. And so, you know, we've learned a lot over the years. We've made some mistakes, but I think, you know, we've got some really good insights into what we need to do. And we're making meaningful progress towards that right now.
Thank you to our amazing community on Patreon for supporting this podcast.
You can support us too and get different perks and gifts depending on which Neuro Jedi tier you sign up for. For example, if you're on our Neuro Padawan $5 tier, then you're probably listening to this episode a day early before its public release.
Your support helps us grow and continue to create this podcast. Plus, a portion of the proceeds go to a different cause or individual in the brain injury survivor community each month. Sign up at patreon.com/theneuronerds. We're in the middle still. I don't want to say in the middle, hopefully towards the tail end of a once in a lifetime worldwide pandemic. Has that been difficult to keep your research moving forward?
So I'd say yes and no. Honestly, I'd say the research has not been a big problem. And the biggest issue is actually on the recruitment side. I think on maybe, let's call it, perceptions of risk. And that's a lot of that's on the university side. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, because we can make strong justifications that these things need to be done, we've basically had zero barriers, I think, in terms of progressing. I think the larger barriers are not on the research side, are actually on the real treatment side. I think that's been the biggest barrier, because so many of these clinics, you know, it's neuro rehab was perceived to be a not necessary procedure. And I say that with the utmost disdain. And I think that has been the biggest barrier, I think, from COVID. And because that is the case, that has kind of impeded our ability to sometimes access individuals who might want to participate.
Right.
So I say that it's not like the research was stopping. It's because the people who would normally be working with potentially the referral sources are the ones that were not really getting there. So that it's kind of an upstream problem, not a, a downstream problem.
So it's been wild times. Especially, I have a survivor friend, a model who lives in Hotlanta, and she's lost 7 members of her family during this, which is just, it's mind blowing. Like it really is. And it just, it hurts my heart and soul. So I always hope everybody stays safe. But that's also another really beautiful thing about the Modus Hand is the fact that you can do it in home. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to. Now, again, for the people that desperately need the Modus Hand or the Modus Foot, it's difficult to get up and go sometimes. You could do this from the comfort of your own home. And for me, it works out great because I hate wearing pants. You know, it's just, who wants to?
It's too constricting.
who wouldn't want to do rehab and just hanging out in their drawers? So yeah, that I just think that's amazing. I love that. Now, the Modus Hand, it's mostly, you guys were aimed at stroke survivors, correct?
Yes. Let me qualify this by saying the clinical trials that were done were almost exclusively focused on individuals who had either subacute or chronic stroke impairments. So, or I guess impairment secondary to stroke, whether that was hemorrhagic strokes or ischemic strokes. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it.
It's not just, but it can also be for basically anybody who's had any kind of physical issue after a brain injury. Now, does that, is it only brain injury, or could it just be, you know, somebody who's had a physical injury, period? A pitcher with a rotator cuff injury, they're having trouble with their arm. Would that help them with their functionality?
Yeah. So let's, what I always do in this situation, Joe, and this is the scientist clinician will come out a little bit here.
Okay.
What I always do is I boil it back down to first principles, right? So whenever and I often will do this, people will come to me and they say, hey, Nick, I've had a spinal cord injury, or I have multiple sclerosis, or I have been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and I have these sorts of impairments. And what I say is, thanks so much for telling me your story. I'm really glad you were able to share it with me. It gives me great insight into who you are, your journey. Let me tell you what the devices can do and what we have strong evidence for. I explain that. And again, I'm very, very transparent about the fact that the clinical trials were done in stroke survivors, and given all the context, I talk about the efficacy there. And what I do is I say, period. Now, as a provider, as what you would do in any case, what you do is you boil it down to first principles, right? How would I treat the person facing me in terms of their function, right? And so PT and OT is all about identifying impairments, developing interventional strategies that can help them improve that function or maintain or preserve what they have, right? Depending on what's going on with them. And in those cases, a lot of the interventions that I would do for someone that has stroke and has upper extremity impairments, someone has a spinal cord injury and has upper extremity impairments, or someone with Parkinson's disease and has trouble with lead pipe rigidity or has trouble with, you know, ataxias or difficulty initiating movements, a lot of the same sort of approaches I would use, right? These are movement-based techniques that are designed to help people learn to reintegrate a limb back into their normal function, to improve their range of motion, improve their strength, reduce tone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in that, with those sort of strong foundations, I say it's certainly possible that this tool could be useful for you. Now, the big distinguishing feature among all of these different etiologies that one may say is it's all about the dosing, honestly. Right? Dosing is so critical. And this is why it's so frustrating to me that we don't have insight into this, because that's the key determining factor about how I'm going to treat someone with a spinal cord injury versus someone with a traumatic brain injury or a stroke or someone with MS. MS particularly, because dosing is so important. Being an inflammatory disease, we have to make sure that we do not go too hard, right? Because that can cause additional problems. And so being able to control the dosing conditioned on someone's response in real time is absolutely the perfect solution, right? And so that's why I think these tools could be really applicable across multiple sort of domains, multiple different types of injuries or diseases. But that's me talking about it from first principles of just general medicine. We don't have the data for it. And I'm always transparent about that. I say, well, the best thing to do in these cases is we try it and we ask ourselves very regularly, is this helping us? If it's helping us, great, let's proceed. If it's not, let's try to change things. Let's try to turn all the knobs and see if we can make it work for you. And if we come to a place where we have turned all the knobs, we need to look ourselves in the mirror and say, hey, we've tried our best for this and it's just not going to work. I'm sorry, but I'm really glad we tried this and now we know, right? So that's my tack with this. And a lot of people have been doing that, right? We've had all those individuals, you know, individuals with spinal cord injury, individuals with traumatic brain injuries, individuals with MS and Parkinson's disease. All those individuals have used these devices and had seen improvements. And so it's certainly possible.
That's interesting. I just see the product. I just see so many different levels brain injury where it could be beneficial, you know, specifically in sports world, you know?
Oh yeah.
I really see that, specifically baseball pitching. Like I see, wow, that would be like a cool, I'm just saying, I think Modus Nova is going to take, I think you're going to take over the world, you know, once it, like Modus Nova turns into Skynet and we're not talking about sentient robots. No, I honestly, Dr. Knight, I just think it's phenomenal what you guys are doing, you know, and I said it with David, the passion behind what you're doing is why I'm so excited about what you guys are doing. Like just the product alone, I think it's great for our community. I just think it's tremendous and it's going to help so many people. But the fact that you guys actually put so much care into this is why I'm excited. It's why I'm always going to be on board with Modus Nova, because you guys just have that thing, you know, you're not just, I'm just doing this for this reason. Mm-hmm. Like you as a brain injury survivor, you understand how this impacts the community, you know?
Yep.
You know, a man of science, you understand how this can help people. And as a human being, you understand how this can help people. That's why I'm all about how this is going to change people's day to days, like their quality of life, you know? And specifically when you guys get to I don't say this to disparage anybody. The what they've been called helpless, that tiny group of survivors that feel helpless and that nobody wants to help them. Hey, Modus is coming for you guys. Yeah. You know, stay patient, keep hope, keep fighting, because they're on their way. I'm just so thankful for what you guys do. And I've become a huge fan of you guys. You know, I just always want to help as best I can. And this has been a great conversation. I loved talking to you, getting to know you, Dr. Nick. I also like saying Dr. Nick because it reminds me of The Simpsons. Clearly, you're not Dr. Nick. I honestly expected you to come out and be like, hey, everybody. No, that would have been really weird. But, you know, at this point of the show, I do say that we are the neuro nerds over here. Yeah. So I would like to know what your nerdom is, Dr. Nick.
Yeah. So this is why I was going to laugh earlier when I remembered what David brought up, and because, you know, my background, right? So of course it's cycling, right? I started racing when I was like 14 I don't race anymore, of course, secondary to the injury, but right. I still have friends who are in the professional peloton racing the Tour de France. Right. And so guys that I used to race with. And so I am a bit of a nerd when it comes to keeping up with my friends who are in Europe, racing bikes. That's and, it's a little bit nerdy. I still know all the races and the commentators and all that stuff. So that would be my nerd out, I guess.
So you're a cycle nerd.
I'm a cycle nerd. Yeah. And then of course there's the real nerd, right? Of course, you know, you talk to me about, spinal cord neurophysiology and circuitry, about how you coordinate purposeful limb movement. I will, of course, go full nerd on you. We can talk about, you know, how these really cool ion channels are absolutely critical for you keeping your neck upright, right? For keeping your head up straight, right? I love to talk about all these sorts of things. So, yeah.
I love that. Can I tell you why I love that? Because there was like a little bit of a switch that went on, and the energy in your aura completely changed. You know, it's almost like, you know, if you have somebody who's living in our country from a different country, and so English is their second language, but they have to speak English all the time because of where they live. When they meet someone who speaks their native tongue, the energy changes. Your energy just changed like that. Like, oh, I get to talk about the thing that I'm passionate. You were speaking your language.
Yeah.
It's like anytime, you know, I run into somebody, it's like, oh, wait, you're a Marvel nerd? You're a Star Wars nerd? Let's talk. And then I'm like, oh, you guys are speaking my language. That's what you just did right now. I think that's amazing.
I love it.
So now let me ask you just a real quick question about since you had I'm sure the bicycle, the bike crash was traumatic. Was it difficult to literally get back on that bike?
Well, technically speaking, I was still on a professional contract. I crashed in March of 2020 or of 2012. And so I still was under professional contract. So I still had to do my job, unfortunately. So it stopped a little bit more abruptly because, long story short, they ended up actually finding a brain tumor secondary to the injury. And so I was not able to continue. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a complex story. So I was not able to race again. But I did get back on the bike and ride again. I never raced again, but I've ridden. And so it wasn't hard. The first one was pretty hard. My mouth was wired shut, so it was pretty hard to breathe. So I mean, physically it was pretty hard. but sure.
Was there the fear when you got on the bike? Is, oh my God, it's going to happen again?
No. Oh, I don't think so.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was in a race, right? It you know, someone basically did an unsportsmanlike behavior. So it wasn't my fault when I went down. Someone brake checked me and I went down. So
dick. Sorry.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. So it was like not my fault in the crash. So I wasn't worried about like my bike handling skills or, you know, whatever. Right. But it wasn't that bad.
So if it came down to it, race between you and David, who wins?
We'll say me.
So I told David the same thing. I don't know how to ride a bike. I never learned how to ride a bike. So at that pivotal point in life, right? You see it in all, like I'm 44 now. So I was born in 77. So like I grew up in the 80s, right?
Okay.
So all the 80s movies, you have E.T. and you're like all these really, these cool bicycle like moments in life. I never had that because around that age when everybody was like on their bikes and hanging out with their friends, I was moving. I moved around so much as a kid.
Okay.
I never had the roots in any place that I was at to actually befriend these kids and like, hey, we're going to go around the corner and ride our bikes for a couple blocks. I never had that. So then by the time I settled in out here in California, I was already close to being a teenager. And it's like, I don't want to ride a bike. I was too interested in girls. So that's what I was chasing. I never learned how to ride a bike. So my mission now, post brain injury, is to actually ride a bike because I want to say, hey, it's just like learning how to ride a bike. I want to be able to say that. I can't because I don't know how to ride a bike. So David said,
here's a formal invitation. Come out to Atlanta. We'll ride bikes.
Hotlanta. I'm in because
Or you won't have to twist my arm. I will come to California. You don't have to twist my arm very hard. I will come to California. I'll bring a bike.
Hey, California, we are always open arms over here. David said, he's like, well, if you learn how to ride a bike, he's like, I'll make my way to California and we'll ride bikes. I'm like, I am in. I'll learn how to ride a bike just so I can hang out with the Modus guys. Because I think that'd be dope, you know? I'm hoping, hope of all hopes, that I can do it without training wheels. I don't want to be that guy. You know, I fancy myself a pretty damn good athlete, and I don't want to be on an adult tricycle. I don't want that.
It's okay. There's no judgment here, Joe. Though, if you need it to start, that's fine. And then, as like anything, we will progress. We will make it more challenging for you as you improve your motor skills. We will slowly take the training wheels off, and then you will be free.
See, this is the mind behind the Modus. I just think it's amazing. Honestly, Dr. Nick, I find your mind fascinating. Like I really do. Like I think you need a reality show. I sincerely do.
That would not be fun for anyone.
And I just love the switch that turns on when you're speaking about something that you're passionate about. And speaking of that passion, I love that for our community. Like I sincerely do. And I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful for everything that you guys are doing. You in particular, because you're like the guy behind the scenes almost, you know, even though you're in front of the scenes for me, because I saw your face all up on the intro to Modus Nova. So like, I feel like I've known you. I kind of feel like I've been in class with you. You know what I mean? Like you were like, you're like the teacher. Sure. It's like, oh, I know this dude. So like when I met you, I was like, oh, I know you. Like I already know you. I'm so thankful. I'm so appreciative of you and everything that you have done, continue to do, and will do. That's what I'm really excited about. I'm very thankful what you've done up until today. I'm always about, hey, what's next? And what you have going on next is mind-blowing. And to be honest, it's going to be life-changing for so many people in our community, not just our community. Like you're expanding out. Like you're like Amazon. You guys are like trying to take over everything. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, we're trying because we know that these things can be, or not, we don't know yet because all the data specifically, but we're trying to see where these tools can help other people, right? You know, we mentioned earlier about individuals with traumatic brain injuries, individuals with spinal cord injuries, you know, we're doing active trials so that I don't have to have that qualified statement of we don't have the data. Right. We're going to get the data. Right? We're going to do that. Like, we're going to study individuals who had traumatic brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, and other types of cortical lesions. I know, I think September is aneurysm month, right? So yes. We're going to hopefully see if we can parse out the you know, whether or not it's has different types of effects in these different types of populations. And we want to see if we can help them. So that's we're really excited about being able to help as many people as we can.
And you really are, you know, you really are the love and the care that you guys have put behind this is tremendous. And the amount of people that you've impacted is just, it's phenomenal. And I've seen this firsthand with my people. I've seen it firsthand with Maddie, who I'm going to have on the show. And she's going to give her testimonial about what Modus has done for her. I met Maddie for the first time in person a few months, maybe what, 2 months ago. And I've known Maddie a few years now, but I actually got to see her in person. She's a very short person. I don't know if you know this. She's like a pocket-sized person. She's absolutely fun-sized. When I first met her, you know, I got to see just videos of her online and I was like, oh, wow, you know, she's been impacted like physically from her stroke. The work that she's put in and where she was to where she is. And I know a huge chunk of that is the work that she's put in with Modus. And I think it is just tremendous. It's amazing because Maddie is just, she's such a good friend of mine and she's just such an amazing person. And I know what it's done for her. And everybody out there, it's accessible. Like, this is, and Modus is making it more accessible. Every iteration of this is going to be more accessible to the people out there. And I'm just so thankful for everything that you guys do and continue to do. It's at this point in the show that I give out all of our socials. So Modus Nova, you can reach at modusnova.com. Definitely take their assessment. See if Modus is right for you. And if you have any physical impairment after brain injury, it should be right for you. You can reach out to my beautiful, tiny ass-kicking co-host, Lauren, at Lauren L. Manzano on Instagram. You can reach out to me at Josel Rocks on all the socials. You can reach out to us at the Neuro Nerds everywhere. Hey, and on that, beautiful Modus Nova is here to stay, changing the world, changing lives. Really, Dr. Nick, I'm so thankful for you. I appreciate you, and I cannot wait to ride bikes with you. I'm excited. I'm so jazzed about that. And on that two-wheeler note, this Neuro Nerd is out. Awesome. Awesome, Doc. That was great. I hope that was cool. I hope you had a good time. It was great chatting with you.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun. It's always fun.
If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. Your reviews help us grow and reach more listeners like you.
Find us by searching for the Neuro Nerds on the Apple Podcast app today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.